all. Sometimes we're all just garbage.
I'm always garbage.
Just, you know, it's been a fucking couple weeks. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm with you. Like,
I've said it many times.
I'm horseshit dickery everywhere.
It's all a result of, like, chasing my fucking dream. Like, God damn it. I'm doing exactly what I want to do, and I'm so goddamn sick and tired, I can't enjoy it.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not a figure of speech. I'm sick and tired of blah, blah, blah. No, I'm physically fucking sick and tired.
Yeah.
Story of my
life. What a great opening to this comedy podcast. Welcome, you fucking people, to our fucking show. Thank you for fucking listening. I love you. I wish you all nothing but the best. I hope your day or your drive or your workout is going well. I just want to die. Fucking Christ, dude.
What was that? Was that who's
It wasn't me.
Who's vibrating?
It might have been me.
Anyway, hey, hi.
Oh, I need to turn the speaker.
Hi.
It dings when it finishes.
Hey. Ayo.
Whomst among us? Whomst among us? Wouldn't that be hilarious if that were actually a thing?
If you dinged when you came?
Ding!
Well, there'd be a lot of really, really sad and confused men out there when there's really no dinging.
Yeah.
The fake dinging.
Oh,
you can't fake the ding.
You guys can fake a ding. We can't fake a ding.
But if it's a real ding, you can't fake it.
Right.
So, anyway, that took a weird.
We're just out here dinging our dongs.
Just.
Oh, well, fucking hell. Welcome to Ghosts and Hoes.
Ghosts and Hoes.
What an aggressive start today.
Yeah. Ghosts and Hoes.
An aggressive
podcast.
Paranormal comedy. True crime podcast where Randall yells how much he loves you and says nice things in a tone that is confusing.
And spoopy.
And also everything else that you're about to say.
Yeah. And we talk about cryptids.
Yes.
Yeah.
Aliens.
Sure.
Sometimes.
Motherfucking witchcraft.
They're
definitely
here.
Once.
Murder most motherfucking foul.
Most of the fucking time.
Yeah.
And today, aggressive Randall.
Aggressive Randy.
This is what happens when I'm like, non-contagiously and operationally sick.
Also, is it because you're hangry a little bit?
I'm not.
Let's fix that.
I've got.
Oh, it's on the way.
I know, but
you've got
I have
there.
A more immediate fix
yeah,
to
no,
that
it's
part.
Going right in my face hole.
You need you need something to fix your sugars?
Probably.
Okay.
I do.
Well, we'll start there, because I've got plenty of backhoes. So, plenty. Because
we have backhoes.
Oh, yeah, we haven't
backhoe away.
Bit.
We haven't, yeah.
We haven't been here in a minute, which, surprise, sorry, we forgot to tell you that was happening beforehand. Whoops, that was my bad. But,
we're here now.
Here we are. So, before snacks, first things first, shout out to our new patron.
Hell yeah.
Denise.
What up, Denise?
All the
what
way.
What up, Niecy?
All the way over.
I don't know if you like that or not, but I'm calling you that.
Across the pond.
Ooh. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Where?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I want to say London.
Nice.
Well, if
I have to get some international stamps, but soon.
International.
When this drops, I will be on my way to Amsterdam.
Lucky.
And then I will be on my way to Ghent shortly thereafter.
What? I don't know that I've even heard of Ghent.
Ghent is a small town in Belgium.
Oh, okay.
It looks very pretty.
Oh,
lovely.
And
so,
if you're there, let me know, and we might get coffee.
Snacks! First things first, snacks.
Snacks.
You don't want to go through the rest of the backups?
Well, we'll do snacks first, because
okay.
I feel like you need them. You need this.
Oh, you want me to calm down, is what you're trying
to
say.
I need some, too.
I don't need you to
I've
calm down.
I've been on the run today.
I just don't want you to feel these feelings anymore.
Well...
So at least not life. Right now. These.
I can read the back. It says sweet. Spicy.
Yeah. These are Lay's sweet and spicy honey.
Oh, roll them
up.
Put them on the
butt. Yeah, mine too.
They don't. I mean, I would.
And I just put lotion
That's
on.
That's love.
I mean, yeah.
Ooh, they do smell delightful.
Yeah.
They
smell... don't have that typical like Lay's fart
They don't smell,
smell.
Like fart.
Yeah.
Give me your farts.
Oh, no.
Give me that bag of farts.
Yeah. We don't do that.
Bag of farts? No, thank you. Mm-mm. All right.
All right. Shirts that stay on my.
Let's go.
You know what? Chips. Fuck it.
It's all right.
We got today's some, a fuck it day.
We got some chips. Let's try them.
Yeah.
Damn it. Okay.
Mmm. Interesting.
Okay. Okay. Oh, there's a little heat. Mm-hmm. Those are nice.
I really like the texture of Lay's chips.
I do too.
So, like, you can flavor these fuckers anything you want them.
I got
like
a real good crunch.
I'm trying to find the honey.
I can taste the honey.
A little bit. It's not too overpowering honey-wise. It's just like a nice, it's almost like mm-hmm. a spicy barbecue sauce. Mm-hmm. But better than a barbecue chip. I like those.
I do too.
Those are good.
Those are real good.
Do we want to do, I have two spices and a sweet.
Are those from Asian Market or regular store?
Regular store.
Heard.
I think I got them at Safeway.
Heard.
But these, on the way here, when I was gathering my things, I'm like, did we already try these? And I don't think we have. I think I confused myself at the store, but I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Because it's Oreos. Huh? It's Oreos. Mm. And I can't remember if we've had these or not. I know I have. But I can't remember. They're churro flavored Oreos.
I don't think we had churro Oreos. I know
we did the dirt cake ones.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember.
No, we haven't done churro Oreos.
We've got the churro Oreos, uh-huh. which I have already tried, and I can tell you they are really good.
Okay.
Well, so we've got a sweet. Do we want to do a sweet and then another spicy? Or is two spices and then a sweet?
Two spices and a sweet.
Okay. These.
Ooh, pissy. What is it?
We're at the recommendation of my cousin.
Okay.
They are Cheetos Flamin' Hot Smoky Ghost Pepper Puffs.
Okay.
So they are not like the regular Cheetos. They are
a puff.
The puffy boys. Ooh.
I too am a puffy boy.
I think they look like ghosts.
Stop it. Okay, that's hilarious.
I don't know if it's intentional. Probably, but
it says Ghostbusters on it, so
we
probably
gotta go see it.
I know. We still
see what?
The new Ghostbusters.
There's a new one?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yep.
There is?
Yeah.
Why? What happened? What is it?
They made a sequel to the last new one.
I loved that one.
Yeah, they made another one. All right. These are adorable.
Ready?
They smell like barbecue sauce.
They do.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Those are fucking delightful.
I need to eat like five of them because those are still mm-hmm. on my palate.
Those are real good.
They're real smoky.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Smoky, tangy.
I've had.
Not getting a ton of hot.
It'll come.
It's a slow burn. It's like creeps up at the end there.
It's not like.
But it's not like
gonna
you know,
burn your butthole later. Mm-mm. Spicy, but it is good. Mm-mm. I have had the Ghost Pepper puffs before, not these specific ones, but. Was that the Carolina Reaper ones? Maybe it was those.
Nom nom.
But if you take the puffs and dip them in sour cream, you're welcome. Oh. I almost brought some sour cream so we could do that, but I forgot.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
It is.
Like ghosts, I think they're shaped like peppers.
I whichever. I'm saying ghosts because Ghostbusters, but they could be ghost. I mean, they are ghost pepper flavored.
Isn't it called a ghost pepper because the pepper looks like a ghost?
I don't know. I've never seen one. But.
I mean.
Or you were asking me.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But okay. I could say maybe we're both right.
Maybe. I'm going to look it up.
And then these. These.
Oreos.
Yeah. Churro flavored. Oreos. Oh, yeah. These are good. These are really good. I feel like Oreos need to keep these around for all the time.
I'm reaching.
The birthday cake ones are still my favorite, but these are very good. And even
I still
though
like the Pop Rocks ones.
I think I just don't like Pop Rocks.
Oh, see, I love Pop Rocks.
I like them on a Jell-O shot.
Mm. Oh, no, that's too many things that I don't like textures of at the same time. That seems like a nightmare.
Oh, exploding Jell-O is not your thing.
Exploding goo? No, thanks. Hard pass. But yes, these.
Which one?
Oh, shit. Okay.
Feeling better?
You're right, I was angry.
I know. I recognized myself in you in that moment. Been there. In fact, I've been so hangry in the past that I cried at the Chipotle when they were out of lettuce.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
I get it.
Okay.
I get it.
Well, no.
I like those. You don't like, oh no, the pepper is not shaped like a ghost? Mm-mm. Okay.
I was like, wow, you are very upset with this cookie.
No,
no, so good, the right? name comes from its Assamese name, the boot.
It's boot jalokia.
Mm-hmm. Boot in Assamese means ghost.
Oh, okay.
Well, jalokia means pepper. And it's most likely because the heat sneaks up on you like a ghost.
Aha. Aha.
Aha.
This is weird because I can taste it, but I still have the burning in the front and back of my mouth.
Well, that's a fun sensation for you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I bought a package of those for myself because I thought we had already tried them. And then I remembered on the way here that I was like, I don't think that's right. I don't think we have. And then it was the dirt cookie ones. But they're still delicious.
Nom on these while you go.
Please do. Oh, yeah. So this...
It's all backhoes? Yeah. Oh, fuck me. All right, go. Yeah.
So, first, RIP to Joe Flaherty. He was a character actor. You may know him best from Happy Gilmore as Donald, the hired heckler.
Jackass!
Yep. Mm. But he got his start at the Second City and went on to... star on SCTV with folks like Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Rick Moranis, and Harold Ramis. Sir, you will be missed.
Very much.
He's another one of those guys where you see his face and you're like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah.
OJ Simpson died. The end.
Okay.
The end.
Apparently, Richard Allen Davis, a.k.a. the piece of shit that murdered Polly Klass, is trying to get a, quote, full resentencing due to changes in California laws regarding prior conviction sentencing enhancements. So the, attempted lewd acts with a child and all of the other things that he had been, that had been added onto the murder charge.
Right.
There were changes in laws regarding those kinds of things. According to a Daily Mail article by Beth Ann Sexton, which was written and posted literally the day after the Polly Klass episode aired.
Random.
The literal day after it happened. And I was like, I don't like it. Okay. So, to quote the article, the outrage around Klass's murder led to California enacting the Three Strikes You're Out law, calling for life sentences for repeat offenders. Since then, successive governors Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom have enacted laws watering down the measures to combat mass incarceration. In 2021, Democratic Senator Ben Allen pushed through a bill that applied the elimination of prior conviction sentencing enhancements retroactively. Davis's lawyers argued in February that the rule change means he should be entitled to a full resentencing as his initial penalty took into account 4 prior serious felony convictions and 3 previous prison terms. But prosecutors do not believe the law change is applicable to the death sentence for the murder and say it would affect only 2 years worth of his prison sentence for other charges. Allen has since stated that the law, quote, was definitely not intended to undo the death sentences of condemned killers, end quote. I agree with the prosecutors on this issue of interpretation and hope they prevail in court. He spoke to Mercury News. Davis will not be put to death anytime soon amid the state's pause on executions, and given the fact California has only carried out 13 executions between 1972 and 2019. Newsom signed an order putting capital punishment on hold and calling for the closure of the execution chamber at San Quentin Prison, as well as repealing the state's lethal injection protocol. The order does not amend the conviction or sentence of condemned individuals. End quote. And that is part of the article. If you want to read it, you can go find it. I don't know what he's hoping to get out of this or why he's right, even he's bothering.
You've got life, bro. What the fuck does it matter?
It won't really change anything for anything. Him, but it's probably just because he is the literal fucking worst.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm already in here. Let's just tie up some more fucking
taxpayers' money.
Money for, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, oh, that piece of shit.
Eat my shit, you fuck.
Exactly that. Patricia Krenwinkel recently voluntarily waived her right to a parole hearing for a year, meaning her next hearing will be planned for the summer of 2025.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, interesting, but okay. And then we had a few submitted from listener and friend of the show, Hawkeye Anna. So, First... In-N-Out can't be within the Portland city limits because of the polystyrene, aka styrofoam laws, which, according to the City of Portland website, quote, restaurants, grocery stores, and nonprofit food servers in Portland are prohibited from serving, selling, or packaging food and beverage and products made of polystyrene foam. And so it's the same with Sonic, apparently. So they cannot operate within Portland city limits because they use styrofoam packaging.
But there's plenty of room out in Hillsborough where they should have gone in the first goddamn place.
Well, they're coming. So, are you about to say where they're coming to now?
No.
Richfield.
Washington?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I don't go there. She also braved the internet to find out if there were any porns called Hunting Bottom, like we assumed that there had to be. But apparently, the only one even remotely close is a little number from 2018 called Hunting Huge Bottom Latina Snappers.
Wow.
Which is probably safe to assume has nothing to do with Elmer Fudd.
No.
She also let me know that Inside Edition still exists somehow. I think I meant to say A Current Affair.
Oh, heard.
Which did end in 1996, but either way, the reference aged me greatly.
Fair enough.
And then Alexis, a.k.a. Best Friend, Longest Known Non-Family Category.
Yes.
Sent me a little article about how Gwyneth Paltrow is being sued by a local Oregon company for trademark infringement, false advertising, and unfair competition.
Do go on.
The Eugene-based Good Clean Love was founded in 2002 by Wendy Sturgar, while Paltrow's Goop trademarked the phrase Good Clean Goop in August of 2023, which used the tagline, quote, or use the tagline Good Clean Goop to sell an affordable version of its clean beauty products.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, I get it, but also feels like maybe a bit of a stretch since a lot of companies use the words good clean.
Can we say good clean fun?
Blank about their products.
Right.
But if you do want more information on that, you can go to the Coin News website, and there is an article by Jashayla Pettigrew. And then
we
can end on this one.
And then.
This was posted in the squad page by the wonderful Holly. It says, so this might partially be me being extra emotional because I'm getting over the flu, but I thought a thank you post for DZ and Randall was in order. I hope that you'll join me. You three show up every week, even when you're dealing with real human stuff, TM, and grace us with a show that is just top-notch. The cream of the crop, the best of the best. If anyone disagrees, I am happy to meet them at my closest Denny's.
If anyone disagrees, fuck you!
You present what's often really heavy information in ways that the average person can follow, as well as with tremendous respect and sensitivity for the victims and survivors. Your banter always makes me feel like I'm in the company of good friends. Anyhow, thanks DZ and Randall. I am sending you my gratitude from upstate New York. And we love you.
We love you, too.
Thank you.
Holly is the name of my Dasher.
Weird little kawinky dink.
Thank you.
Regarding
the dude in prison.
Yeah.
This is only kind of related. Did you see the guy who is trying to get out of his life sentence because he died in prison?
I have heard that.
He died in prison.
Yes.
And then was resuscitated. So he is saying that because he died, he has served his life sentence.
Fuck all the way off. And then when you stop there and you're done fucking off there, I need you to go fuck off another 500 times, stopping at each fuck off point just to restart for 500 more fucking times, you stupid fucking fuck.
I mean, hey, caught him in a loophole.
I gotta say.
I love a loophole.
I mean, I get it.
I love a loophole, and it's a clever loophole.
It's clever as fuck.
I don't think it's gonna work.
But no. But I need, sir.
Way to try.
Way to put it out there.
No
way it's going to work. But wait, A for effort, man.
Right.
That was for effort.
Indeed.
That was clever. I need him to do the 500 point fuck off.
It's not going to work. But appreciate you for trying.
Yeah. Well, shit.
So that was my wall of backhoes.
That's a lot.
It was.
Yeah, I inhaled those sweet and spicy honey.
Lays. They're good.
Because
I'm inhaling these Oreos.
Horios.
Also good. They're
almost gone.
Horios.
Also good. All right,
well,
good.
Fuck. Who goes first?
You do.
Oh, me?
You do.
Let me put on my eye barts then.
Yeah.
Look at me all unawares.
Well, you came in with eye barts, but then I remembered they were your driving eye barts.
They're my driving eye barts, and now I have to put on my reading eye barts. Let me get them on. Are they clean? Yeah, sure. Yeah. All right. Well, I have a story today.
I love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, today's story has all of my favorite elements.
Ooh.
Right? There's a murder.
Naturally.
A cult.
Ooh, okay.
A serial killer.
You do love a cult.
I do love a good cult. A serial killer. And a doe identified by genetic genealogy.
It's like your favorite things.
Yeah. All rolled into one. So today, I give unto you all the story of the Summit Meadow Jane Doe.
Ooh.
Yeah. So back in old 1983,
yeah,
a family visiting Summit Meadow in the Yosemite State Park,
okay,
made a horrific discovery. While the kids were playing in the glade, I hear the sound of music in the background, twirling and swirling. One of them stumbled upon a human hand and forearm.
Nope.
So the authorities were immediately alerted and called, and when they got there, they determined from the looks of it that the arm and hand had most likely frozen during the winter and had recently thawed. So the remains were severely decomposed and looked to have been gnawed on a bit by the local flora and fauna. Maybe not the flora.
Not the flora.
Just the fauna.
You'd have to be in a in a bog for the flora to get you. Or in, you know.
Just the fauna.
Yeah.
The animals. They're little nibbles. The area was searched thoroughly, but there were no other body parts found.
Body pouches?
Yep.
Body pals.
Yes.
Okay,
got no it. Other body pals found. That is until the 1988.
Uh-huh.
When a skull with no jawbone was found. Close enough, but outside of the original search zone.
Got it. But close enough to be like, ooh, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Yes. I was going to make a stupid joke about something.
That's fine.
Oh, are you talking? Was this person a? Never mind. That's very disrespectful.
He's like, nope.
Just eat your Oreos. Okay. So the examination suggested that the arm and hand belonged to a police. Wow. Fuck.
Wow.
A petite adult female, although it wasn't definite. And it was also presumed that all of the parts found had belonged to the same person and had. Whoever it was, they're guessing had died between the fall of 81 and the spring of 83.
When she was found.
When the original hand and forearm were found, yes. So investigators combed through missing persons reports and hoped that after the information was released publicly that someone would come forward hoping that it was their missing loved one, but no one did. Also, in 1983, convicted serial killer Henry Lee Lucas, partner of Otis Toole,
those fucking turds,
went on a confession spree in which he confessed to over 100 additional murders.
Yeah.
Now, we've spoken enough about these two to know that we all know that he cannot be trusted.
Neither
can be trusted.
Neither a one of them. Also, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is a really disturbing and great movie, by the way, with a very young Michael Rooker playing Henry Lee Lucas.
Oh, I can see that, too.
Yeah, it's real scary.
I can see that.
Like, when you know who Henry Lee Lucas's and you see young Michael Rooker, you're just like, oh, I'm uncomfy because also why am I slightly turned on?
Right. Exactly. He's Michael Rooker. I mean,
he's Michael Rooker. He's also the nicest man.
So I felt when I watched Dahmer.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. But Michael Rooker is the nicest man in the history of time, and he got real excited about my Doctor Who tattoo when I met him one time. So
Michael Rooker's such a gem.
He really is a treasure of a man. Anyway, so if you're wondering what Henry Lee Lucas looked like, it's young Michael Rooker. So it picture really that. Is.
Except
like the idea is there.
Yes, exactly.
Rough him up.
The general concept.
Rough him up, fuck up his teeth, take him out, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's like if someone described Michael Rooker from memory and they got it just a little bit wrong.
A little bit.
Is Henry Lee Lucas.
Heard.
It's like the Wish Michael Rooker.
Yes. Yes.
The Temu. The Temu.
Yeah.
Even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
TikTok shop Michael Rooker.
So now these two totally unreliable. Oh. However, they did have to check in on,
obviously,
you know,
that is protocol.
So the NPS, National Park Service investigators, so because this happened in Yosemite, they've got their own
own situation.
Yeah. So the NPS investigators went to Texas to interview Lucas, and although he couldn't remember the name of the national park, he told them that he had picked up a young female hitchhiker whose name he did not remember, but she had straight blonde or light brown hair and silver rings on both hands somewhere between Fresno and the park, saying that when they got to the campsite, they drank beer, ate some fried chicken that he had packed, and then had consensual sex, out of which he killed her afterwards.
When you have to specify consensual sex, I feel like it's not consensual sex.
When, what's the point? You killed her. We had consensual sex, and then I strangled her to death.
Trigger warning. Right? I didn't rape her, just so you guys are aware.
But I did kill her.
But she did.
I killed her. I didn't rape her.
I'm not a monster.
Right? Rude. How dare.
Debbie dead. Debbie real dead.
Yeah. Right?
I'm so sorry, but it just would not leave my brain.
But yeah, he was like very, very like clear on the sex being consensual. Like it was just so it,
like, okay.
But then I strangled her.
Okay.
So.
Okay, sir.
Okay.
So. Odd amount of specificity in the story.
Right. So the investigators.
What happens when you're a liar?
Oh, God, yeah.
So many unnecessary details.
Oh, yeah. So they took the info that he gave them, went back to the Summit Meadow area. They looked for and found a possible campsite that matched Lucas's description. They took a look around. They found fried chicken or chicken bones, crushed beer cans. So, okay, maybe he wasn't lying.
Okay, and was this
83.
So he confessed in 83.
83.
Okay. Because I was in 88? That's a long time later.
No, it was also in 83. Okay. So when they found the hand and forearm in 83, also in 83, he went on his confession spree.
That's it, okay.
And then in 88, they found the skull missing the jawbone.
There it is. Okay.
Right.
My brain
It was 83.
Okay,
It was recent.
Okay, good. So I was like 2 years.
Recent to when the hand and forearm were found. Yes.
Because my brain was like, if it's past the time when they immediately found it, then even more evidence pointed at him being full of shit. But,
yeah, no, because 83 was the year that he went on another confession spree. I mean, 100. Yeah.
Oh, that
so they did. They found chicken bones, crushed beer cans. So they're like, okay, all right. So the information, however, was not proof of a murder. At best, obviously, it's just circumstantial evidence that he had camped in the park sometime in the early 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's really about it. So the case remained cold, but over the years, and with the advances in technology, forensic anthropologists attempted several recreations of the woman's face just based on the very few genetic markers that they had and the skull shape. Because, you know, they had no jaw, they just had her skull and what DNA they did have.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in 2009, DNA analysis confirmed both sets of remains did belong to the same person as was initially believed. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
So, but it was confirmed.
Good.
So now let's fast forward to the fall of 2020.
Okay.
In the age of genetic genealogy.
Yeah.
NPS investigators worked with Marshall University and Parabon Nanolabs.
Yeah.
To genotype Summit Meadow Jane Doe's DNA to get a profile that included her ancestry, origin locations, as well as a better physical description of her. And through this process, they were able to come up with a more realistic composite photo. Then Parabon did their thing, and along with the NPS, followed up on leads by identifying potential relatives of the Meadow Doe in the U.S. And in April 2021, she was identified, but her identity was not released per her family's request until October of 2022, when her identity was revealed on the Hulu series Wild Crime.
Oh.
And she was 27-year-old Patricia Marie Hicks.
Okay. She reminds me of Busy Phillips.
Mm-hmm. So Patricia, who went by Patty, was born in the early 1950s in Washington State. And according to a 1971 article in the Spokane Daily Chronicle, reviewed by SF Gate, her father was a cabinet maker and her mother was a manager at Value Mart. When Patty was a junior in high school, her brother Edwin Hicks Jr. committed suicide while working aboard a Coast Guard vessel. He was only 23 years old. So the friends interviewed for Wild Crime said that his death was deeply traumatic for Patricia, who adored her older brother. Shortly after graduating high school, she got married to a dude that she'd gone to high school with. It didn't last long, and they were divorced in 1974. Friends said that between her brother's death and the divorce, Patty was pretty lost and vulnerable. So she decided to move to California, ended up in Merced. She was going to go find herself. But what she found was a cult.
Oh, boy.
So at some point, Patty had joined a church, which she thought probably was what she needed after all she'd been through. Except she joined the San Anda Apostolic Church, led by 31-year-old Donald Eugene Gibson.
Oh, boy.
Gibson, who called himself a guru and went by the name Father Incarnate, seemed to come out of literal nowhere, as culty fucks often do. And by the late 70s, he had a small following. He worked as a bookkeeper and sometimes as a yoga teacher for the Merced Parks and Rec Department. And as culty fucks do, he preyed on vulnerable people, and Patty was one of them. So the female members were all recruited based on how pretty they were. The men as well, based on how attractive they were, but with the added bonus of drugs and sex and being able to fuck the pretty female members, as a lot of cults do. Within this group, like many others, there were arranged marriages and sexual rituals, you know, culty shit.
Typical cult fuckery.
Yep. In December of 1980, several members of the group were arrested, including Patty. You see, there was now a probe into the church because three underage males had reported to the police that Donald Gibson had given them LSD and at least one of them had been sexually assaulted while unconscious.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
And that additional sexual assaults and activities were performed under the religious pretense. Yeah. See, Gibson was tried the following September for sexually assaulting several teenage boys. And at the trial, some members testified for the prosecution, with one man stating that Gibson told him that he was Christ and had to pass his seed orally to others in order to fulfill a goal of rejuvenating mankind.
Hot.
Yeah. Prosecutors also stated that Gibson believed that the sexual acts between the minors and himself meant that the minors would become part of the deity that he was, and it would relieve them of their sins. That was, yeah.
No.
Right. So many members, as they do, did remain loyal to Gibson, which the prosecution believed it was either out of fear or manipulation or whatever. It's a cult. So the prosecuting attorney described him to be capable of violence against someone that betrayed him. Not a great guy.
No.
Donald Gibson was found guilty on all four counts of sexually molesting minors. But because it was the 80s, which we all know need to go to jail, he was allowed to be out on bond while awaiting his sentencing.
Well, that's just not going to end well.
No, it's not. Because guess what? He dipped the fuck out.
Shocking.
And he failed to appear for his next three court appearances, and his attorney eventually admitted to the judge that he had not been able to contact his client.
You don't fucking say.
A deputy DA told local media that they'd heard that Gibson had fled to Mexico, and to this day, he still has not resurfaced or been found.
Oh, damn.
Donald Gibson is still...
in the wind.
In wind.
Oh, shit.
In Ween.
She is Nell from the movie Nell.
Shy am Nell from the movie Nell. I mean, and he was 31 in the 80s. I mean, he's potentially very much alive.
Yeah.
Living some good goddamn where else.
Yeah.
Never been found.
Jesus.
Yeah. Donnie G in Ween. Being a gross fuck culty guy somewhere else. Yeah. I'm assuming. Or maybe he's dead.
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I ate part of that cookie. Now I've got like...
You got some churro cookie dust in your throat?
Well, no, you know, sometimes when you eat sweet things and then the devil gets in my throat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, so that was a giggity moment.
It was.
That I was drinking, and I wasn't drinking my giggity moment. I was drinking my drink, and I couldn't... Never mind.
I feel it in my spirit, though.
You know, okay.
I did.
Well, we made eye contact.
We did.
You knew.
I did.
You knew. Okay.
I did.
Well, so I'm going to go on now.
Please.
Yes. So Patty's family had last heard from her in September of 82. And at some point after that, with her guru on the lam, Patty apparently made the decision to leave town. And according to her roommate of several years who had also belonged to the cult, Patty had planned on taking a bus to Yosemite. But other than that, the roommate didn't know what her specific plan or destination was.
Yeah.
So, another potential suspect for Patty's murder came later in 1999, when Carrie Stainer, a.k.a. the Yosemite Killer, was arrested.
Oh.
The oldest of five children, Stainer, was born in Merced, California. He had three sisters and a younger brother named Stephen. Stephen Stainer. And if that name sounds all fucking familiar to you.
Oh, boy.
That's because on December 4th, 1972, seven-year-old Stephen was abducted by a real fucking monster pedophile named Kenneth Parnell. Mm-hmm. And he was held by his abductor just 38 miles away from his home until he was 14 years old.
I know my first name is Stephen.
Mm-hmm. And when he was 14, he bravely managed to escape, taking another one of Parnell's victims with him, five-year-old Timothy White. Now, and if you're a certain age, like me and Z, then you definitely know the story, which became a media sensation, and in 1989 was turned into a television miniseries called I Know My First Name Is Steven.
That's one of those VHS tapes that had been recorded directly from TV, mm-hmm. and... for whatever reason, was watched at my house.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a movie you want to watch all the time.
No. It's, yeah.
What's his name? Steven Dorff? Wasn't he in that?
Maybe a young one.
Yeah. I think he played Steven. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to look it up because it's going to drive me insane.
So, now, back to his piece of shit brother.
God, that... These two have been on my list, mm-hmm. the Stainer brothers, mm-hmm. because that poor fucking family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
So in 1997, 36-year-old Carrie was hired as a handyman at the Cedar Lodge Motel in El Portal, California, which is just outside the Highway 140 entrance to Yosemite. And between February and July of 1999, he murdered at least two women and two teenagers, all of whom he had met at the lodge. So on March 18th, 1999, 42-year-old Carol Yvonne Sund and 16-year-old Argentine exchange student Silvina Peloso were found in the trunk of the charred remains of Sund's rental car. The bodies were burned beyond recognition and had to be identified using dental records. Sund was strangled with a rope and shot, but was not raped, while Peloso was raped and shot. A week later, a note was sent to the police with a hand-drawn map indicating the location of the third victim, Sund's 15-year-old daughter, Juliana. And at the top of the note was a little scribble that said, "We had fun with this one."
Oh, why would you do it?
Because you're a sick piece of shit.
Yeah.
So the investigators followed with the directions. Well, they followed the directions on the map, and there they did find the remains of Juliana, who had been raped and her throat had been cut. Detectives began interviewing employees of the motel where all three of the victims had been staying just before their deaths, and one of those employees was Stainer, but he was not considered a suspect at that point because he had no criminal history and remained very calm and normal during the police interview.
Carrie?
Right.
Also, Stephen Dorff was in that movie, but he was not the main star. Why my brain remembers him and not, because I feel like it was not a very big role, but my brain remembers it. I don't know.
Fair enough.
But Stephen Stainer was played by Corin Nemec, a.k.a. Parker Lewis from Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
And
yep.
Also, apparently, Bryan Cranston was in it.
Oh.
Yeah, he played an officer.
Oh, okay.
So... there you go.
Now you know.
Yeah.
Parker Lewis, I can't...
Oh. So I was right that he was in it, just wrong as to who Stephen Dorff played.
God, I just...
But yeah, Corin Nemec, Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
AKA I forgot about that show.
Ferris Bueller Light.
Ferris Bueller Light, exactly.
Even though there was a Ferris Bueller TV show, briefly, but obviously did not do well, so Parker Lewis Can't Lose, I think, took its place.
Oh, God, I totally forgot about that show till just now.
Yeah.
There is some little history trivia for you.
There you go. It's the early 90s, late 80s television. Mm. Do I know math? No.
No.
Do I know more? Do I know that?
Yeah.
Don't ask me why.
Yeah.
You know, so, I can't explain these things.
So he was interviewed and just, you know, okay, cool. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah.
Then several months later, on July 22nd, 1999, the decapitated body of Yosemite Institute employee 26-year-old Joy Ruth Armstrong was found. Now, eyewitnesses reported seeing a blue 1972 International Scout parked outside of the cabin where she had been staying one day prior to her death on the 21st. The detectives traced this vehicle back to Carrie Stainer, which led to him becoming the prime suspect in the case. And... they went looking for him. The FBI found him staying at the Laguna del Sol nudist resort.
Okay.
In Wilton, where he was arrested and taken to Sacramento for questioning. So during his interrogation, Stainer shocked the agents when he freely confessed.
Oh.
Pretty quickly, not only to Armstrong's murder, but to the killings of Peloso and the Sons. And when they checked his vehicle, there was evidence linking him to his most recent kill, Joy Armstrong. Stainer pled guilty and is currently sitting on death row in San Quentin. So, now, I'm sure you're all wondering how he ties in to the Summit Meadow Jane Doe and Patty Hicks.
Yes,
well,
please.
That's because, following his arrest, he became the prime suspect for several other unsolved murders and disappearances. And they are. December 26, 1990, Stainer's paternal uncle, 42-year-old Jesse Stainer, was shot to death inside his Merced home with his own shotgun. The murder was never solved, and Carrie Stainer, who had lived with his uncle at the time of the shooting, he was living there.
Mm-hmm.
The case wasn't solved, but he said that his uncle had molested him around the time of his brother Steven's kidnapping.
Oh, it's just all so bad.
Yeah. So then there's a case from October 1994 where severed human hands were found near the New Malones Reservoir. Then in December, on December 13th of the same year, a headless and handless torso was found in a cluster of trees off Camp 9 near Camp 9 Road near Vallecito. Forensic pathology determined that the hands had belonged to the body. And a year later, in December 1995, the remains were identified as belonging to 24-year-old Sherilyn Mavon Murphy. Her head, unfortunately, has never been found.
Mm.
And the FBI have tried to find evidence linking Murphy's death to Stainer due to the similarities between her death and the murder of Joy Armstrong. Real similar.
Mm-hmm.
The authorities also reviewed the case of 34-year-old Denise Smith, whose decomposed body was discovered in a 50-gallon burn barrel off Jacksonville Road near Don Pedro Reservoir in December of 1994. Then there was Michael Larry, aka Mike Madden, Age 20, he had planned to meet friends near Sandbar Flat Campground in the Stanislaus National Forest near Sonora on August 10th, 1996. He left his family's home around 5 a.m. and was never seen again. His homies pulled into the camp spot at 2 a.m. on August 12th, and he was not there. They think that he could also potentially be a victim of Carrie Stanner, but, I mean, who knows? He targeted women, but
maybe
you never know.
Could always have been a one-off.
Mm-hmm. Then, last but not least, our doe, Patty Hicks. Now, even though her murder was 17 years prior to his arrest, Carrie Stanner would have been 21 at the time.
Yeah?
I mean, that's, you know, at the time of her murder. So, and he had admitted in court that he'd fantasized about abducting and murdering women since he was 7 years old.
Oh.
So 21 is plenty old enough to pull that off.
Yeah.
Stanner was also known to have been involved with the San Anda Apostolic Church and was homies with its leader, Donald Gibson, at the time of his 1981 trial.
Donnie Gibbs.
That of which Carrie Stanner attended the trial.
So
the local authorities believe that Carrie may have chosen to kill Patty Hicks in retaliation for testifying against Gibson in court. Right. So why did Patty Hicks take off to Yosemite? Was she running from something or someone? Or was she running to something or someone?
Yeah.
How did she die and why? These are all questions that are unlikely to ever be answered. But I think that we have all learned over the last few years of doing this show that when it comes to cases like this, we can never say never.
You certainly cannot.
And that is the story of Patty Hicks and the Summit Meadow Jane Doe.
I want to let you guys know real quick.
Yeah.
That I've been doing some extensive research and thinking on this matter.
Yes.
And I want to let you know.
Yes. Oh boy.
That we are recording.
Oh my God. That Thank God. So great. I love that for us.
Phew.
I love that for us.
Phew.
Yeah. So, obviously didn't dig too terribly deep into the Stainers because this is Patty's story.
Exactly.
So, that is still, there's still more,
so much. I have almost covered it.
Stephen?
Yes, several times. Both.
Yeah.
Stephen and Carrie, because holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Several times, but it is a rough story to tell.
It is.
And
tears rough?
Probably.
Okay.
It's bad.
It's real bad. And it's just like a sandwich of horrors.
It is.
I do like sandwiches, though.
Not this one.
No.
No, it's, I'll give you a rundown later, but it's very.
Well, you should definitely do Stephen. I mean, obviously touch more on Carrie because I just did.
Exactly.
Pertaining to.
Stephen's story is alone. Like, even without his brother involved, like what happened with his brother later on, but
being abducted and living with your abductor, pedophile, for 14 till you're from what, 7 to 14?
Mm-hmm. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rough.
It's real bad.
Yeah. And it's then escaping and being brave enough to save the other child. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's harrowing. It's heartbreaking. It's disgusting. And it's a lot.
It is.
Of but the story that
he escaped,
was turned into a TV
He was abducted
movie.
At 7, escaped at 14, and took the 5-year-old that the man had also abducted with him to escape. Saved him.
Yeah. And you'd think, yay, a happy ending.
Except his brother is a serial killer.
Nope.
So.
Da-da.
Da-da. Yeah. So, yeah. But again, I'm glad that they figured out who she was.
Yes.
But still no idea how she died. I'm going to say it was him.
I feel good about that assumption.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because we know he liked to chop women up.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was not opposed to that. So.
No. And then
who amongst us doesn't?
I mean, right?
And then the connection with the cult.
I mean, yeah.
That's.
Yeah.
Just several.
Yeah.
Flags of red.
Yeah. Mm. Yep, yep, yep. And that motherfucker is still sitting on. He's in San Quentin.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Maybe but again, I didn't. Yeah, there's. I just touched on.
Go punch Richard Allen Davis mm-hmm. for me.
So, my sources, many a wiki, documents, latimes.com, Toronto Sun, Brad Hunter, ForensicMag.com, an article from November of 2021. Unidentifiedawareness.fandom.motherfucking.com.
Yes.
SFGate.com, Katie Dowd, and OutsideOnline.com, Graham Averill.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I had not heard of that one.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on there. Story I had not heard. Clearly, I had, unfortunately, familiar with Carrie Stainer.
Yeah, we got a doe that gets solved. We got a couple serial killers. We got a cult. There's a little bit of everything in there.
A little bit of everything going on.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. What the fuck is going on over there?
What you got? Well,
after last week, I felt like it was probably best to do something a little less heartbreaking. And by last week, I mean the week before.
Yeah.
Because, child cases are so very rough. But also important to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But
also, you and I are working on something really big, so.
Of course. Yeah. Yes. I couldn't decide what exactly that meant until an old episode of The Dollop started playing while I was driving to work one morning.
Oh, The Dollop has been just a good source lately.
It really has. And to paraphrase Stefan, this case also has everything.
Love that.
We did it again.
We did.
We really did. You'll see. So, strap in, my sweet beef babies, because shit's about to get real weird in here.
Yeah!
This is a real fucking weird one.
Love it.
For today, I'm going to tell y'all the fully unhinged story of the Denver Spider-Man.
I'm sorry, the what?
The Denver Spider-Man.
Okie dokie.
The Denver Spiderman.
Spiderman.
The Denver Spiderman.
Spiderman Spiderman.
Yeah. Esquire.
It's a spider.
.com.
Mr. Denver Spiderman.
Esquire.
Esquire.
The fourth.
Yes.
So, here we go. In the fall of 1941, Philip and Helen Peters were having a bit of a rough go of things.
Yeah, Shane.
Seeing as their kids were grown, they'd moved out ages ago. Phil, a 73-year-old retired auditor for Denver and Rio Grande Western Railroad, was left to his own devices after 68-year-old Helen broke her hip and had to be in the hospital for an extended period of time to recover.
Oh, boy.
It wasn't all bad, though, because after living at 3335 West Moncrief Place for over 30 years... they'd managed to build decent relationships with their neighbors, or maybe it's because it was the 40s and it was a different time.
It was.
But whatever the case was, his neighbors made sure that he had nice home-cooked meals while Helen was gone. In one article I read, it mentioned that some neighbors sent him home with enough leftovers so he wouldn't have to worry about lunch the following afternoon.
Aww.
And I just think that's nice.
That is very, very nice.
Cute. Like, is it a thing that I personally want to happen to me? Gross. No, thank you. I will just order my little Postmates and snatch it from the porch like the feral hobgoblin that I am. But that's also because I just don't want to bother anyone with my existence. But that is one other thing for Dan the therapy man. Just kidding. We talk about that all the time. All the time. So, anyway, most nights, Phil would have dinner with friend and neighbor Jenny Ross and her family because he didn't like to eat alone.
And he probably didn't know how to cook. Back in those days, he's just going to sit there and walk to his dining room table and look around because he doesn't know what to do. Yeah. He's going to open up a can of pork and beans. He's going to eat it right out the can.
Straight out the can.
Because he's Phil and he's 73 and it's 1940 what?
41.
41.
Yeah. And he and his wife had been married for almost 50 years.
Phil knows not shit all.
No. No. Helen.
In the kitchen.
Helen ran that house. And she was out of commission. And Phil.
Phil.
He's like, I don't fucking know. I don't know.
He's like, what's a stove?
I just sit at the table and the food appears. I don't know what to do.
He's like, I don't know.
Pan make stove or stove make pan hot?
Yeah.
Stuff makes them hot.
Jenny, she was like, Philip,
Jenny,
come here to me.
Hot make butter goop.
Mm-hmm. And let me feed you. Come here, let me help. So, which is great.
Was this phone number 867-5309?
I hope so.
Okay.
But I don't think she's the type to have that song written about her. Mm. But maybe.
Maybe.
Jenny don't got my number.
Mm. Damn.
Miss Jenny Ross, whomst among us, can say.
Of course, back then, your phone number was like three numbers.
That's true. You just...
I'm calling Lincoln 356, operator. Right.
And then they put you through.
Operator.
Yeah, Lincoln, she...
One ringy-dingy.
Two ringy-dingy. We are derailing.
We are
well. It's also long-term, elderly. So naturally, we're derailing.
That's true. And now that you have food in you and you have the energy to be a menace.
Tired. No, I'm still very tired.
Okay, good. But I feel like that menace energy is still
it's
in there.
It's a little there.
Your menergy? I don't like that.
Ooh, that's a terrible
word. I take
word.
It. I take it back.
Take that back.
I did immediately.
I wish I could bleach my ears out or my brain part so that I don't ever have to.
But also bleh. Not. So, you know.
It's terrible.
Speaking of working for the railroad, let's get back on track.
Let's you.
That one's for you, Phil.
Yeah, Shane.
So, you know, you just have neighbor dinners and stuff and whatever. Jenny was like, just come to
eat
me.
Eat your meatloaf,
Let
Phil.
Me feed you for the love of God.
Meatloaf. Meatloaf.
Phil's neighbors knew that he wasn't doing so great when Helen was in the hospital.
Meatloaf, meatloaf.
A Christmas story.
Yeah. Double feetloaf.
Yeah.
I remember. Mm-hmm. So, you know, left to his own devices while Helen's in the hospital. And his neighbors were like, we're going to keep an eye on Phil.
Yeah,
and they
Phil's
did.
Phil's not all right.
So they made sure to check on him and check in with him throughout the day. However, on the evening of October 17th, Jenny started to get a little concerned when he didn't show up to join her family for dinner.
Oh, no.
Because it was during that time period, you know, you would always call or something to if something came up, you'd be like, you know, I'm just not going to be
good
there
time
tonight.
Call. We've covered this.
Well, a different kind of good time.
867-5309.
AKA dinner. So she was like, I don't like this. This is weird. He was 73, so she was immediately worried that he may have fallen or succumbed to some other horror of living alone.
Pork and beans.
Yeah. So she went to the Peters house and rang the bell. No answer. But the most troubling of all was the fact that Jenny could see Phil's cane and hat still sitting in the darkened hallway.
Oh, shit.
Which was a telltale sign that he hadn't left the house and something was very clearly off.
No.
So she went around and got a few neighbors to come and check things out with her. Safety in numbers and whatnot.
Of course.
They checked all of the doors and windows, but everything was locked up tight. Now, sources vary on what happened next. Some say that the concerned neighbor, a.k.a. Jenny, called the police, and they were the first ones inside the house. While others claim that one of the neighbor girls in the roving band of friendly neighborhood Gladys Kravitz's removed a loose screen and climbed into one of the windows.
Yeah.
And once she was inside, the screaming began.
Oh, no.
Which was why and when the police were called. Because either way it happened, the outcome remains the same. Phil Peters was dead, and he had been murdered. His death was a tremendous shock to the neighborhood. Also, yes. Yeah. It was a tremendous shock to the neighborhood. To quote an archived and unattributed article from prisonmuseum.org, quote, okay. It was not a street for murder. Death should tread with dignity there.
This is not a street for murder, Shay.
You're too late. It's too late for that.
Not a straight for matter, say.
No.
You are 10 years past it.
For what? For what?
But death, it very much hadn't tread with dignity on that day. Not in that Denny's. Oh, boy. It did not. At 6:40 p.m., police arrived to investigate and discovered Phil's half-dressed and barefoot body laying on the floor of his home. Furniture in the house had been overturned, proving that there had been quite the struggle.
Oh, no. Phil, struggle.
I'm going to kill you both with my bare hands right now.
I didn't say anything.
Not in that second, but you did before. I will murder you both. I have so many pages.
We'll go.
So many. So, so many.
How many?
Seven.
Seven.
Oh, I'm going to shut up. I'm going to shut right the fuck up.
There you go.
I know how long this is going to take.
So, a struggle had happened, and there was also evidence to suggest that Phil put up quite a fight.
Yeah, he did.
A couple of canes that he'd made were found away from their normal spots. Another one was apparently broken in half.
Oh, he was beating people with
sure
his cane.
Sure as fuck was.
Yeah, Phil.
And so they were like, okay, well, these aren't normally in the middle of the floor, which indicated that he grabbed them in an attempt to fight off his attacker. Blood was also present in several rooms of the house, with some reporting that it had even reached the ceilings.
Oh, shit.
The scene was so gruesome that Detective Captain James E. Childers called it, quote, the most brutal I have ever seen.
Oh, damn.
During the initial search of the house, investigators discovered a few items that seemed out of place. According to an article in the Daily Sentinel that was published the next morning, those items included, quote, a piece of hard rubber that might have been part of a revolver handle, a hairpin, and an ashtray with two snuffed out cigarettes, end quote. All of which was collected and taken in for further examination. Mm-hmm. Fingerprints were found in the home, but they all belonged to the Peterses and mm-hmm. their neighbors.
Yeah. 1941.
It was. As for the rest of the house, there was no sign of forced entry and everything had been locked, including the chain on the front door from the inside.
That's a problem.
Yep, everything was locked from the inside.
That's a problem.
Yep. As for Phil, the poor man had been beaten so brutally that, quote, one blow had knocked off one of his fingernails.
No, Phil!
Yeah, not good.
Phil got fucked up.
He Damn.
Did. I don't like this.
Man. You shouldn't, because it's only going to get worse.
I don't like it.
The murder weapon, a cast iron stove shaker, was found freshly cleaned next to a damp and bloodied rag in the kitchen. And for those who aren't sure what a stove shaker is, myself included, until researching this case, it's described over on Woodsman's Parts Plus as a tool that's, quote, used to shake the ash into the ash pan while coal burns in your stove, keeping it running smoothly, end quote.
Heard.
It almost looks like a big metal crank. I did manage to find a photo of the actual shaker in question, which I will post on the gram when it is time. I will pull it up so you can see it as well. Because I was like, what the fuck? So it's kind of like, it looks like an attachment to, like a little grate that you hook, the grate and separate the ash.
Got it. Because, you know, they weren't cooking with gas.
They sure were not. It was the 40s.
Yeah.
We're not so cooking this,
with gas.
That's what it looked like.
Oh, boy. Okay, yeah. That's, okay, got it.
That's the one.
Got it.
Then it's made of iron.
Yeah.
So she heavy.
Like cast iron, like a cat. Iron.
Yeah.
I don't know why I had to explain that to whoever.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It was also the opinion of Deputy Coroner John Killam that the bludgeoning had continued after Phil was dead.
God bless it. Yeah.
All told, it appeared that Philip Peters had been struck by an object almost 40 times.
Philip has been through enough.
Exactly. With Detective Childers adding that the bulk of the blows had been to his head, with two of them actually puncturing the man's skull.
God bless it.
Yeah. He would later add, quote, whatever the motive, the killer wanted to see Peters dead. This lends to a theory that the assailant was acquainted with Peters and might account for the brutality of the crime. The killer was completely without mercy.
Damn.
Speaking of motives.
Yes.
What could the assailants possibly have been in this case?
What has Phil done?
According to some local and very unsubstantiated rumors, Philip had a large amount of cash stashed somewhere in the home. So robbery would make sense.
Okay.
Typically, robbery would make sense, but not here. During their walkthrough of the home, detectives noted that nothing seemed to have been missing, not to mention the fact that Phil's watch and cash were found untouched on the dresser.
Well, that ain't it then.
Nope. One source claimed that it was $400 in cash that had been left around the house, but it's the only source I used with that information, so I can't say for sure if that amount is correct, but interesting if so. Of the two likelier motives, Detective Childers pointed out to the Denver Post that, quote, the killer took time to wash his hands and to wipe off the murder instrument, so he could have taken time for the robbery.
Okay.
But he didn't.
Why clean up the murder weapon? Right,
exactly.
Just to leave the bloody rag there. I don't understand
that. Who knows? The only other plausible motive was someone hell-bent on revenge, but friends, neighbors, and investigators were all quick to dismiss the idea, as Philip Peters, by all accounts, had been a kind and decent man with no enemies to speak of. Hmm. With almost nothing else to go on, it seemed that Mr. Peters' killer had vanished like a ghost. Something that would later be picked up on by local media, who referred to the case as the Denver Ghost House Slaying.
Oh, boy.
Helen, now widowed, remained in the hospital for a while following her husband's murder. In the meantime, the house on Moncrief Place sat vacant, but not entirely empty. Neighborhood kids swore they'd seen a light coming from inside the house. Another woman in the neighborhood claimed to have seen a ghostly face peeking from one of the windows.
Okay.
And another neighbor, whose name I have forgotten and did not write down like a dum-dum, she and her kids swore up and down that they would see random lights on in the house and then off all of a sudden. They're like, well, we know nobody is there.
Right.
So clearly she hainted, which is a fair assessment.
Or someone's living in it.
Also a fair assessment, but ghosts, the first choice for everybody in the neighborhood.
Fair enough.
So neighborhood gossip concluded that the house was indeed haunted, perhaps by the restless spirit of Philip Peters, who would not rest until his killer was caught.
Sure.
We'll go with it. In February, Helen was released from the hospital and returned to the home that she had shared with her husband for
ever
30 years. She was only there for a couple of weeks before something, and no sources say exactly what, something startled her badly enough to cause her to fall and fracture her thigh bone.
Jesus!
She just got out of the hospital after spending months recovering there.
Helen!
Only to be home for like 2 weeks. Something scared the shit out of her, caused her to fall, and break her thigh bone.
No bueno.
Fracture it. Still.
Jesus,
terrible.
Jesus, criminimini.
Some sources say that she returned to the hospital for another, albeit much shorter, stay and employed a couple of housekeepers, one during the day and one during the night time, to help her recover, while others report that Helen was sick of hospitals and she chose to have an in-home nurse instead.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the case may be, the women she hired never stuck around too long due to the inexplicable, likely paranormal occurrences that went on there.
Good God.
Apparently, strange rattling sounds and noises inside the walls at night proved to be too much, and one woman allegedly told Helen that she, quote, wasn't going to stay in some haunted house, end quote, before she quit.
Oh, okay.
She's like, absolutely the fuck not. Goodbye. And left.
Good day, ma'am.
Immediately. Helen, I'm sorry. I gotta get the fuck out of here.
Good day.
I'm sick of this fucking ghost. And if it's your husband, I'm sorry, but he's driving me to distraction. So she peaced out almost immediately. Another of Helen's caretakers quit for similar reasons, but I'm gonna say hers was a wee bit more intense.
Oh, God.
She'd also endured all of the weird sounds and even went through the house searching for the source to no avail. I mean, old houses make weird noises all the time, but if you just moved in, you're not gonna know that the water pipes make a creepy knocking sound if you turn on the hot water at night,
mm-hmm.
or what a family of squirrels living in a wall might sound like. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Just
sure.
Like, this is, the house is settling, I guess,
sure.
But I am unsettled by that. however, just a few days after her fruitless investigation to debunk the haunting rumors, she reached her breaking point when she saw, quote, a spook on the back stairs that chattered its teeth at her.
Fucking fuck that.
I would have Kool-Aid manned myself out of the nearest wall and never returned.
We're not teeth chattering up in here. That's like wall crawling. I'm not into it.
Don't fucking chatter at me.
Mm-mm.
Don't do it.
No.
Why would you do it?
No,
why would you do it?
It's right up there with wall crawling. Fuck that shit.
No, hard pass.
Hard pass.
I don't like that.
I hate it.
And while I'm certain she didn't burst through any walls, she immediately resigned and never went back to the Peters house. Same. Which is fucking fair.
Yeah.
I know.
Sorry about your hip and thigh. I'm out.
She's like, Nope. The chattering ghoul. No. Mm-mm. I don't ever want to be confronted with a chatterer.
Hardest of passes.
Just the most a special pass.
Yeah.
Following the second housekeeper's exit, one of Helen's friends came to stay and help care for her while she recovered from her newest injury. Mm-hmm. If you think anything changed, well, you must be new here, because of course not. In fact...
Why would it?
Here's where it gets worse. I mean, I didn't think it could after the fucking chatterer, but here we are.
Here we are.
Here we are. Helen's friend and newest caretaker had her own horrifying incident that ended with a call to the police.
Oh, shit.
According to her, she'd heard another one of the resident's strange noises, but something about this time was different. She got up in the middle of the night to go check it out and quickly made her way, in the dark, mind you, towards the kitchen, a.k.a. from whence she believed the source of the noise had originated. Sure. There, at the foot of the stairs, quote, was a filthy, wraith-like thing that vanished when she screamed and she didn't know where it went.
What the fucking fuck?
A filthy wraith-like chatterer?
No!
Get gone, girl! Get gone!
No!
Goodbye!
Wow. Okay.
Sorry, Helen. I gots to go.
The fucking fuck is happening here?
Nothing good. Nothing good. That I know. That I know. For sure. Nope. Just no. During her initial call to the police, she told them that, quote, just a few minutes ago, I heard a sort of tapping. I had heard it before, but I thought it was only some woodpeckers. But this time, I walked into the kitchen, and I saw the door to the stairway that leads upstairs slowly open. A foot came out, and then I saw a thin white hand on the door. End quote. Bye!
So something is living in the attic, or someone thing.
Some...
is living in the attic.
There is a fucking ghoul. There is a fucking ghoul.
All right.
Officers arrived on the scene, but once again found nothing aside from more phantom fodder for the neighbors. Just more stories.
Got it.
The end. After months of hearing weird noises, items being moved, just not being where they had been before, food seemingly going missing, and the goddamn chattering night ghoul.
No thanks.
Helen was fucking done.
Yeah, no, bye.
She called her son, Philip P.K. Peters Jr. in Grand Junction, Colorado, and went to live with him.
P.K., I'm coming.
Yeah.
Mom away.
She's like, come fucking get me. I can't. I shan't.
What?
I shan't.
Happened?
So she left and went to live with her son, leaving the house on Moncrief Place vacant, but not entirely empty, once again. Despite knowing that Helen Peters was no longer in there, neighbors still suspected that someone or something was inside the once happy home.
Clearly.
By July of 1942, the reports of strange sounds, moving blinds, and human-shaped shadows...
We're
still
like that.
Rolling in. There were also the reports of offensive smells coming from the property. Yes, smells. I could only find a description in one single source, which said it was a, quote, strange animal smell.
Oh.
Which is not great.
No.
It's not good.
No.
It's not good. But if Helen left in a hurry, I mean, all the utilities were, she had turned every utility off. Yeah, so maybe if she left something behind in the fridge or the freezer.
Sure.
That would be my first guess. Be like, oh shit, Helen done forgot her beef. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Gross. Because beef. Several neighbors.
Helen made a beef mistake.
A beef. Michael, I've made a beef mistake. But yeah, just...
I smell like beef.
I smell like
beef. A cow concern?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. But it was all bad. Neighbors all were like, bad. What the fuck? And one neighbor, the one with the children that saw the lights turning on and off, kept a baseball bat real close by at all times. Because she was like, fucking absolutely not. Whatever's happening in that devil house, not today. Mm-mm. Not today.
Bovine blunder.
Oh, dear God. Dear sweet Lord. Yeah, this is good, though.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
And as far as the blinds moving, they would be in different positions. No. So, you know, blinds, they'd be like, just open one direction. They're like, hey, why are those open now? Or why are they flipped over to the other side of the... What is happening in here, Helen? Helen's like...
Helen's gone. Helen says, I don't know, I left.
Eat shit and live. I don't care. I am gone.
I'm headed off with a...
So gone.
PK.
She's like, me and my boy.
Yeah.
Not that house.
Mm-mm.
Not this day.
No, not no on thanks. This day. Not on the street.
Uh-uh. You keep your chattering night ghouls.
You keep your goddamn Cenobites out of here.
Exactly. Hard pass, guys. So, the smell, not great.
So many things happening.
There's a lot. Seeing as they still hadn't caught Philip Peters' murderer, not to mention all the calls coming in about the vacant and likely haunted house, the Denver police decided it was best to keep an eye on the place just in cases.
Yeah.
Because they were like, ghosts or maybe squatters.
Yeah.
Or
someone living in the
squatting
attic.
Squatting ghosts.
Or neighborhood youths.
Not the youths.
Just being turds. Hard to say. Mm-hmm. Hard to say. So we'll keep an eye on it. A little looky-loo every once in a while. Mm-hmm. On July 30th, it was Detectives Roy Bloxham and Bill Jackson's turn to stake out the Peters house. Some reports say that the police regularly entered the home to check into the calls placed by the neighbors, while others claim that one of the men spotted a, quote, hobgoblin face in one of the windows, prompting them to run inside to investigate.
We got spook schools and hobgoblins.
Spook schools and hobgoblins.
Oh, my.
Spook schools, hobgoblins, and night chatterers.
That was almost the name of this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to need you to write down that order and send it to me so I don't forget it. So just in case we need to rename it someday.
Spooks, ghouls, hobgoblins, and
night chatterers.
Night chatterers. That last one does not roll off the tongue.
It doesn't. It's not like fun spook to say, schools though. And hobgoblins, oh my.
They got him. So they ran inside to investigate, and whichever way it went down, Bloxham and Jackson went inside.
Flotsam and Jetsam.
That's what my brain immediately thought. I was like, ooh, they're cartoon eels, which is fun for me. But they went inside, and the vibe was immediately off. They looked around the main floor, but, like always, found no evidence of anyone being inside the house.
Yeah, see, there's nobody here.
But then, the detectives heard a strange click, almost like a lock being turned, coming from upstairs.
Oh, shit.
They headed to the second floor and looked for the cause of the noise, but initially didn't come across anything untoward. That is, until they opened a closet and, much to everyone's shock and horror, saw two spindly legs in rotted and tattered trousers furiously kicking in an attempt to wriggle back into the tiny hole leading into the last place you'd want to find someone hiding, the attic.
There's something one living in the attic.
One of the officers...
Spindly legs.
Uh-huh. One of the officers grabbed the, quote, scarecrow of a man by the leg and yanked him down to the floor, where he immediately fainted. The man, not the officer, fainted.
I figured, yes.
Just for clarity's sake.
Yes. A spindly ghoulish wraith.
Though I would not have blamed him if he had passed out as well. The man was roughly 6 feet tall and weighed about 75 pounds.
Oh my God.
That is not enough pounds for an adult man of almost 6 feet.
I need to know how they got a man living in their attic.
Well, I'm about to tell you.
All right.
Because it's a fucking doozy. I can tell you that much now.
God.
Oh, boy. Here we go. So, yeah. Almost 6 feet tall. 75 fucking pounds. So, spindly legs. Yeah.
Chattering wraith spook.
Scarecrow of a man.
Yeah.
Also, yes. Chattering night ghoul.
Nope.
Yep. One officer described him as, quote, beetle-browed, wide-eyed, and pale as a ghost. He hated sunlight and was the color of a mushroom or of a spider that scurries for darkness when discovered hiding under a stone.
Ugh.
End quote. While the police chief said he was, quote, the strangest looking human I had ever seen. He was a tall man, just under 6 feet, but thin as a wilted weed. His dirty hair hung low over his ears, and his skin was the ugly, unwashed gray of an overcast sky.
Oh, good God.
Uh-huh.
So descriptive people were in the 40s.
They sure were, and I appreciate it, but right? Also I don't, because thank you for the night terrors.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, more officers arrived on scene to investigate and hopefully finally close Philip Peters' case after 9 months of ghosts and dead ends. Back in October, detectives had seen the creepy little cubbyhole in the closet, but didn't bother to open it because, one, it appeared to have been sealed shut, and two, they probably rightfully assumed that no grown human person would have been able to fit inside of such a teeny space.
Right.
Because the entrance to the attic, and that is used loosely, it's said to have been just barely 8 inches wide by 15 inches long, with the article on the Prison Museum website saying it was, quote, not quite 3 times the size of a cigar box lid.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So the entrance to that was
real small.
While it's terrifying enough to be confronted with the fact that a man can and, in fact, did fit inside of that seemingly impossible space, what lay beyond the entrance was even worse.
Oh, God!
Yeah, the tiny doorway led to a crawl space of sorts. Again, I would say attic, but it doesn't feel...
I was going to say, it sounds more like a crawl space.
It doesn't feel entirely appropriate. So the crawl space was described as, quote, a few sizes larger than a coffin. It measured...
Okay.
Sources vary on how big it actually was, but it was around 3 feet by 7 feet. So
small.
So real teeny tiny. Small. Like 7 feet in length and about 3 feet high.
Just all kinds of claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Got it.
Not great. Hate it, in fact.
Yeah.
Officers sent their smallest man, named Fred Zarnow, up into the hidey hole to check it out, and it did not end well. The room, or more accurately, nest, was dimly lit by a single hanging bulb. An old ironing board had been crudely fashioned into a bed, covered with old ratty blankets that he'd managed to scavenge from who knows where. He procured a small radio and an electric plate to keep him warm in the bitter cold of the winter. Old magazines littered the already grim space. But perhaps, worst of all, were the numerous containers filled with human waste that lined the walls.
No!
Mm-hmm.
How long had he been there?
I'll tell you in a minute. Between those jars and the lingering stench of a man who hadn't bathed much, if at all, for who knows how long. It's me. I know how long, but we'll get there. well, it proved to be a bit too much for Officer Zarnow, who threw up almost immediately after being hit by the smell.
Ugh, no.
Yeah. Once he was out of the rancid outhouse of an attic, Officer Zarnow said, quote, a man would have to be a spider to stand it long up there. And thus, the Denver Spider-Man moniker was born.
There it is.
Once the man had regained consciousness, he was promptly arrested and taken to the police station, where he identified himself as Matthew Cornish from Tonawanda City, New York.
Tonawanda!
That's a real fucking fun word to say.
Tawanda!
Also that one. He didn't really offer up much more information, so he was given coffee, a hamburger, and some apple pie in the hopes of getting him to open up. And also feed him, because,
buddy,
Jesus, good Lord.
What are you doing up there?
After a few hours and the meal, he finally did decide to open up to the officers.
Okay.
He was not Matthew Cornish of Tonawanda, New York. No, no. He was actually 59-year-old Theodore Edward Conies of Petersburg, Illinois. And boy, I hope you're ready to get bummed out, because here we go.
No.
According to Conies, his life had been incredibly difficult since the day he was born. As a child, doctors told his parents, Thomas and Isabel, that because of his respiratory issues, which would later include a bout or two of the galloping consumption.
Oh, yeah.
They told him that they shouldn't expect him to live to see his 18th birthday. Man. He was a sickly, sickly boy. His father died when he was only 6 years old, causing he and his mother to move around quite a bit before they eventually settled in the Denver area where...
Bless.
Belle, bless you.
Yeah.
Found work as a housekeeper at the Denver Democratic Club. He loved to watch the other kids play sports, but was never able to join them because of his weak lungs and other health ailments. At some point, it said that he either dropped out or his mother pulled him out of school because of his poor health. But much to their surprise, he beat the odds and lived to see his 18th birthday.
Nice.
He found work at the Denver Brass Works as a bookkeeper. And after his mother's death in 1911, he began drifting around, looking for work where he could find it, though his attempts were largely fruitless. At some point after his initial move to Denver, Conies began attending the local mandolin and guitar club meetings.
Okay.
You know, if I can't play sports, I guess I could play music.
Sure.
And he's got them long, spindly fingers, mm-hmm. so... Guitar, mandolin, piano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure. These meetings just so happened to take place at the home of one Mr. Philip Peters.
There it is.
Phil and Helen invited the young man to have dinner with them on several occasions over the years. But over time, they lost touch when Conies moved out of state. But he returned to Denver a few times prior to 1941 and ran into Phil, updating him on his life since they'd last met. On one occasion, he mentioned that his mother had been swindled out of what little money they'd had by a couple of men who'd managed to talk her into selling them a property she owned back in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming it was some kind of, like, big investment situation, and then they just dipped, and they never... found out who those men were. They never got their money back, which is very sad. It was around that time that Conies revealed he'd started working in advertising and was taking care of his mother. So he was doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Their next encounter took place in 1912, where Conies relayed the news of his mother's death, sharing that, quote, he just kept on living and didn't know what to do.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. He tried to join the military, but was essentially laughed out of the office because of his medical history. Mm. He'd moved to New York at one point and tried to become a salesman, but it didn't pan out. Also, that was probably taking place during the Depression.
Yeah, I was going to say. So,
yeah, real difficult.
Yeah, things, I mean, it's even 41, things still weren't great.
Oh, yeah, no. But in 1941, the now homeless Conies returned to Denver and hoped to run into his old acquaintance, Phil, who may have given him some money or even a temporary place to stay out of the kindness of his heart, mm-hmm. which he did. He just didn't know it.
Oh, boy.
According to Conies' written confession, this is how everything played out from September 1941 to his capture in July of 1942. Yes, he hid in the Peters home for nearly a full year.
Oh, my God.
Before anyone knew he was there. He was up in that horrifying nest hole.
For almost a year.
Almost a year.
Wow. Okay.
Yikes.
Okay.
And this is directly from his confession.
Okay.
Everything would have been all right, and Phil Peters would have been alive today if he hadn't caught me robbing the icebox. It was him or me.
Really?
I thought he had gone out, but he was taking a nap. I hit him with the stove shaker when he tried to run for help. I don't know if he recognized me. It was nearly 30 years since he'd seen me last. When it was over, I ran to the attic after I washed and dried the shaker. I was sitting on the trap door when you were pounding on it from below the night you found him.
Oh my God.
I was in the neighborhood in September 1941 and found the house unlocked and no one home. I went inside or I went in and stole some food. I was in bad shape. My lungs were giving me a lot of trouble, and I was at the end of my rope. Fall was coming on, and I knew I couldn't face another winter on the road. I had to have a place to stay. I didn't know Mrs. Peters was in the hospital. I found the hole in the closet, climbed through, and slept and slept. Whenever I heard him downstairs, I kept real still. Then I got bolder and used to shadow him from room to room. It was sort of a game. It gave me a thrill. It was the first time in my life I'd ever had anyone at my mercy, but I didn't want to hurt him. It was miserable hot in the summer, and my feet froze in the dead of winter in that attic, but it was all part of the price I was willing to pay. I can't tell you why I stuck it out. I guess it was mostly because it was a world all my own. I used to go down and look out the windows and watch the postman come by. Nobody's written to me in 25 years. When I saw people on the street, I hated them and would go back to my attic.
Good God.
Oh, boy. When Phil was out for his daily hospital visits to see Helen, because he would literally spend all day at the hospital until visiting hours were over. And then he would go have dinner with his neighbors.
Bless his heart. And of course he did.
Go home, go to bed, wake up, and do the same thing all over again. Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, oh, man. Oh,
Phil.
So when he was out for his daily visits, Conies would skulk about the house, taking scraps of food he thought no one would miss, and frequently dipped his long, spindly fingers into their jam jars in what I can only imagine was the most horrifying of scenes.
Gross.
Aside from literally everything else I've mentioned.
Gross.
Just.
Gross.
No.
Jam jar.
Giggity.
Hey.
That sounds real gay.
Gross.
Jam jar?
Specifically the phrase, sticking his fingers in the jam jar.
Well.
Sounds.
You did.
Real suggestive.
Good. And gross.
It was meant to. It wasn't. But I had a feeling. I knew the possibility was there.
I'm not hangry, but I am more tired.
Well, now you're foolish and sleepy.
Yeah.
I get it.
I'll go to sleep.
Oh, boy. Oh, then there was also the fact that he told Detective Childers that he, quote, hated the sunlight.
Okay.
Which Childers would later repeat to journalists, adding that Conies, quote, recoiled from the daylight as though it struck a physical blow.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Conies would also admit that part of the reason he'd stayed in the attic for so long after killing Philip Peters was because he was scared, saying, quote, I did not eat for days, but I lived. I was afraid to go because I knew I'd killed a man.
Yeah, well.
Some sites also report that on the night of the murder, long after the police had gone, Conies went down and slept in the Peters' bed.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. He also admitted that during the struggle between himself and Philip Peters, he'd found an old gun, which he used to smash against the old man's head. When it broke apart, if you'll remember, there was mm-hmm. the potential revolver mm-hmm. piece found on the day of the murder. It broke apart, he grabbed one of the two stove shakers in the kitchen and continued to mercilessly beat the poor man to death.
Damn.
Coney's trial was initially postponed due to a particularly nasty case of pneumonia that he'd come down with. Like, it almost took him out. But once he'd recovered and was deemed competent to stand trial, because they mm-hmm. put him through some psychological testing for
I bet they did.
Obvious reasons. But he was deemed competent to stand trial, and then everything went forward. Though he'd pled not guilty to the murder charge, citing that it hadn't been a premeditated crime, mm-hmm. he was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison.
Okay.
Following the sentencing, Conies allegedly was quoted to say, "Now I feel safe. I'll have a better home than I've had in years."
Alrighty then.
Which I'm like, that just really bums me out.
Yeah.
He was considered a model prisoner during his time at the Canyon City Penitentiary, which is now Colorado State Prison, where he worked in the prison's electric shop before ultimately becoming the prison librarian. He remained there quite happily, by all accounts, for about 25 years until his death in the prison hospital on May 16th, 1967, at 84 years old.
Oh, damn. He lived longer than I thought he was gonna.
He was buried in an unmarked grave at the nearby Mountain Vale Memorial Park Cemetery, which was allegedly paid for by the warden, Warden Wayne K. Patterson.
Okay.
He had no family, and so yeah. The warden was like, well, I'll pay for him to be buried in an unmarked grave, sure.
All
right. Before his inevitable incarceration, Coney's allegedly revealed to Detective Childers that he did not mind being likened to a spider. In fact, he was quite fond of them, saying, quote, they're friendly. People are cruel.
Good God.
And that is the especially horrifying case of Theodore Edward Coney's The Denver Spider-Man.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Well, I just knew, like, I was like, there's got to be someone living in the walls. There's someone there.
Yep. Sure was.
Had to be.
It was him.
Oh, no, boy. Oh,
bless. Let me find.
Oh, God. You've got a photo of him, don't you?
I am about to show you.
Oh, boy. That is creepy. I just feel bad that he killed Phil.
I do, too.
Like, I mean, you didn't think to say, hey, Phil, it's me.
Right.
I've been your old pal. Sorry, I've been living in your attic. Please don't.
I've been living in your walls.
Right?
Phil.
Sorry. But I mean, but here's the thing. But he felt like it was him or me. Like, I mean, that was, I mean.
Yeah.
He killed him pretty bad.
He killed him real bad.
He killed him real bad for somebody that was like, oh, I didn't want to kill him. You sure?
It's like, you say you didn't want to, but the fact that you bludgeoned him 37, it was 37 times.
That says otherwise, bro. Yeah. That tells me otherwise. Oh, good God. Who does he look like? There's an actor.
Yes.
Who is that? Let me see that again. Fuck. Who is that?
Oh, God. It's a guy.
It's a guy.
He was on Twin Peaks, and I covered his niece's murder.
Let me see his face. I don't know.
There's an actor that looks
Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh.
Thank you.
Yes.
He was in Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was the newer one.
So, yeah, no, buddy, the murder stated otherwise.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean.
They really did. Okay, but tell me, if Harry Dean Stanton were still alive and they made a movie about him, that he would not be Theodore Coney's.
Thank you. Yes.
He absolutely would 100%.
Hundo P.
Have played him.
Hundo P.
In a movie.
Yeah.
All right. Ooh, let me read my sources.
Yeah.
And then
do that.
Because that guy, fucking Jesus.
Take the wheel.
KSDK.com, Ranker.com, Jacob Shelton, 9news.com, Allison Silty, Wikipedia.org, NowIKnow.com, Dan Lewis, FindAGrave.com, Web.archive.org, an archived article from PrisonMuseum.org.
Mm-hmm.
That website does exist, but that article does not exist on that website anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the History of Colorado Prisons website. So it's a museum. You can go there if you are in Colorado and have the desire to see that.
You sure can.
Morbidology.com, Emily G. Thompson, DenverGazette.com, Leslie James, drhpod.medium.com, which is the Down the Rabbit Hole podcast. AllThat'sInteresting.com, History.DenverLibrary.org, user named Caroline, IndieStar.Newspapers.com, part two of an archived article clipping from the Daily Sentinel, dated October 18th, 1941, the day after the murder, and an AP article clipping from the Daily Sentinel from August 1st, 1942. CanyonCityDailyRecord.com, Charlotte Boris, PabloNeurotic.tumblr.com, great site name, by Austin Harvey, TheGuardian.newspapers.com, part one of the archived clipping from the Daily Sentinel, dated 10-18-41.
Okay.
OddlyHistorical.wordpress.com, Dr. New, Dark Histories podcast, season 2, episode 23, The Spider-Man of Denver, Theodore Edward Conies, as told by Ben Cutmore. The Dalit podcast, episode 105, Spider-Man of Denver, as told to Gareth Reynolds by Dave Anthony. And the My Favorite Murder podcast, episode 85, live at the Boulder Theater, as told by Karen Kilgariff.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Holy shit.
Yeah, buddy.
Just.
Yeah, I don't know. The crime stated otherwise. I don't know.
Yeah, that was.
It was a little too murdery for someone who didn't want to murder.
Yeah, it was a,
you know?
Yeah, it was rough. That was rough.
You know, it's, I'm sure Phil was spry-ish. I mean, he had a cane for fuck's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, Phil was old.
Yeah, he was 70.
Sure, back in the day. 73. He was back in the day. He worked for the railroad. I'm going to say he was a complete and total badass.
Probably.
Probably hottie. Like.
Probably. I, unfortunately, could not find any photos.
Yeah, might not be.
Phil or Helen, yeah. But also, yeah.
But.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure he's kind of beefcakey back in the day.
Probably.
But, yeah, bro had a cane. You didn't have to hit him that many times with iron.
Mm-mm.
So, I don't know. That's a hard one. I'm not necessarily buying that I didn't want to kill Phil.
I think maybe it was true until it wasn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because in other sources, they were talking about how the encounter went down when Phil caught him in the kitchen. He clearly did not recognize him because... Yeah. The last time they had seen each other was 30 years ago.
And he wasn't gross.
30 years then ago. Yeah, he wasn't that disheveled and ghoulish. Gross.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I'm going to call the police. And I think old Ted just kind of snapped a little and panicked and went way too hard in the wrong direction.
I think so
entirely
too. I think so too,
but he did spend the rest of his life in prison.
He did.
He cleaned up in there.
Sure.
Put on some weight.
Good,
because you know he's not eating scraps and angering jam.
Jam.
And I'm back.
I knew that would get your attention. But
fingering jam.
I just don't love it. And even though I know Richard Chase did not live in walls, for some reason he has the vibe of someone that would have if he had had the chance.
Totally.
Like, no, I am just going to give myself all kinds of nightmares because now I'm going to imagine Richard Chase in my walls.
No. Just don't imagine him fingering your jam.
I sure won't. I shan't. I don't think old Richard loved jam.
Richard,
it's me.
Bless it.
He loved Tupperware full of...
Blood.
At best.
Blood.
Offal? Is that...
Okay. Yeah, it is. It is.
Oh, Richard.
Offal's a weird word.
It is a weird word.
Offal.
It's an awful word.
Ba-dum-bum.
I mean, if you like it, I love that for you, but I don't necessarily want to eat organs all the time.
No. Thank you. I'm good with not that.
I'm all right. But yeah, holy shit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just fucking, murder. People living in the walls.
Right?
Chatterers.
Yeah. Ghouls and wraiths.
A roving band of friendly neighborhood Gladys Kravitzes.
Spindly legs.
With baseball bats.
Wow.
And meatloafs, probably.
Yeah, oh, all the meatloafs. The loaves of meat. All of them. All of them. It was 1941, you know. Yeah. Take the ground beef and turn it into everything.
Literally.
Literally.
All the things.
All of it. So, man, we had it all today.
We sure did.
Cults and serial killers and does and
ghouls and chatterers in the walls.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, all right. I mean, you guys got it. You guys got some earfuls today.
We sure fucking did. That was a lot.
That was a lot. But we, you know what? We done it.
We sure fucking did done do it.
We've done it, y'all. So you know the drill. Rate, review, subscribe. Yep. Share, share, share. If you'd like some exclusive motherfucking content, go become a patron on our little patron.
Yeah.
And real quick.
Yeah.
Something you didn't hit during the back house.
Oh, go on.
This day that we are recording, April 15th.
This day of our Lord, the 15th of April.
The 15th of April is the 102nd anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic.
It is indeed.
The Titanic. And you know what else it is? Mm. Co-producer Lamanda's birthday.
Happy birthday, Lamanda.
So even though this is coming out not on her birthday, everybody wish co-producer Lamanda the happiest of natal days.
Yes. And you know what? I hope whatever you do today, never mind.
It's better than sinking in the fucking Titanic?
It's better than sinking in the Titanic or imploding on your way there.
Or that.
I hope it's better than that.
Thank you.
There's
nothing up here.
I did that song with my tour director in Barcelona for karaoke.
Oh.
That's impressive.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, would you like some actual names to feel a little bit better?
Oh,
Jack,
yeah.
Come back.
Especially about that happening.
Come back.
Still?
About Jack.
This is happening?
Just Jack.
Here we go. Here's some actual names to make us all feel better about the horrors that we just lived through.
And the Titanic.
Roy Anus Riffer.
Stop it.
Love a good anus riffer.
This one is German.
Oh.
Christian Vagina.
Is it?
Christian Vagina. Yeah, it came from...
This is a German?
A list of, Lutheran baptisms, marriages, and burials in Germany between 1500 and 1971.
Good old Chris Vag.
Chris Vag. Hard on Johnson. Robert, my butt.
Robert?
Bob, my butt.
Good old Bobby,
Bob,
my butt.
Oh, Bob, my butt.
Bob, butts.
Pussy Boils.
That is so unfortunate.
For many reasons, hard pass.
Every reason.
Heinrich Hohumper.
Heidi, Heidi, ho.
Aloysius Wingfart.
What?
That is good.
Wow.
Florence Cockbuster.
Yeah.
That's good. Harry Loins.
Yeah.
Fanny Mist.
Yeah, that sounds like gas.
That
sounds like a wet fart.
That sounds like a spray you need for an infection.
It sounds like an aerosol fart.
Do you need some Fanny Mist? Hang on. Betsy Bitchhead.
Oh, shit.
That's a good one. There are so many good ones.
I'm sure there are.
Flav O'Crapton.
That's a good one.
Flave! Oh, Crapton. That is good. These are my favorite thing. Marianne Diapers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Ooh, Lousy Gort Maker.
What?
Okay.
Yep. There's so many. Righteous Butts.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I have a good Righteous Butt.
I do, too.
Susan E. Shitmore.
Oh, okay.
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
That's a good one. I'm trying to find a good one to end on. Because there's so many choices.
Jack.
So many choices. Jack. Also, I need to make that stop.
Because she's, you know, so squealy, that actually works really well. That was pretty spot on.
That was a good one.
Oh, we can Jack. End on this one. Or this one. Oh, God, there's so many good ones.
You're crushing it.
They're all good. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Carol Windy Bottom.
Check us out. Oh, and this is the last time you're going to hear us this month.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
On the live show.
Yes.
So, and as I alluded to before, this month's Patreon is going to be fucking cool.
Yeah.
Z and I are doing it together.
Yes.
D is just going to be here.
They're going to tell me a story.
We're going to tell her a story. So if you want to hear me giving you my part of an epic tale.
Yes.
Whilst and understanding that all of my research and writing was done with this in my face and head and body going on.
In Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam. Like, this is, my entire story is going to be written abroad.
Lucky.
So, that's all I got.
You can do it.
Till next time, y'all.
Put your back into it. Hexes and hoes, y'all.
Hexes and hoes, y'all.
Hey, bye.
Bye.
Hats off to the Fuck You Club.
Oh, yeah. God. Carrie Stainer.
Yeah.
Donald Gibson.
Definitely.
The fucking...
Henry Lee Lucas.
Otis Toole.
Just because you can't have one without you the can't. Other. You gotta have you them can't. Both, unfortunately.
Yeah. Your wall guy.
Teddy Coney's.
Teddy Coney's.
Good old Teddy Cones.
Yeah.
You know what?
Terrible Teddy Cones. No,
and you
thank
know what?
You.
Fuck that iceberg.
Fuck that iceberg.
Fuck that iceberg.
And yeah. Like, half of the top crew of that ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that captain sucked.
That's all a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Jack. Pump up my jam.
Jack.
Stick your fingers in my jam.
Get your spindly fingers out of my jam jar.
Spindly fingers out of my jam jar.